Today is September 12th, 2018. This is Jay Stuck. And I'm interviewing Bill Dillon, who was a Peace Corps volunteer in Fiji from September 1978 through April 1981. Bill worked for the Native Land Trust Board as a land use planner in Fiji. All right, Bill, thanks for interviewing today. So tell us a little bit about why you decided to learn, or why you decided to join the Peace Corps.
Oh, I thought about Peace Corps ever since I heard about it when I was in grammar school, even. And then never really necessarily thought I would go, but when I finished college and I went to grad school in planning, there was a professor on staff who was former Peace Corps somewhere in Africa. His name was Gabe, and he was really high on encouraging people to go into Peace Corps. And so Cal Poly San Luis Obispo is where I was going to grad school, and he encouraged me to go see a recruiter who they had one on campus. So, and I guess Cal Poly had a pretty good enlistment rate. So so I checked it out and was finishing a two-year graduate program in planning, city and regional planning, and signed up for Morocco. Back then it used to be first come, first serve, and Morocco fell through because of some conflict going on in Morocco at the time. So Peace Corps Fiji opened up, and the recruiter said that was a really great place to go, and I was lucky to get it. So with his encouragement, I went ahead and signed up.
All right. So before Peace Corps, you were in college. Anything about your life before joining Peace Corps? Other experiences that might be relevant to Peace Corps, being a Peace Corps volunteer?
Well, it gave me a chance to work in my field of planning. I just did a two-year degree in that. So going to a country like Fiji where, you know, being valued as a planner, that was kind of neat. But otherwise, I don't think anything is especially different from any other person who goes in the Peace Corps.
So what did your friends and family think when you got when you told them you were going to be heading overseas?
It happened at the end of school and going into the summer. I was down at Cal Poly. A lot of my friends were still up in the Bay Area, so I didn't see a lot of them before I left. Although I did go up there for a couple of weeks before I left. My dad was very supportive. He had been, he had a career in the military, he had 22 years in the Army. So he had lived all over the world and loved it. He and my mom and even us as kids, you know, had a lot of, you know, good times traveling, you know, around doing that. He made a lot of great friends doing that. And so he encouraged me to go in and said that it'd be a great travel experience and a great way to make some, you know, lifetime friends. So he was supportive. My friends in Oakland, when I got up there, were really cool about it, supportive, you know, gave me a little bit of a send-off. And so that was fun. So it was all positive.
So you said that you thought you would be going to Morocco. Was that a choice that you made, or was it just something in the literature you read where you thought you'd be sending your, or was it a preference? And did you have any other preferences for a particular place to go?
Yeah, back then, and I think the approach has changed from time to time, but they qualified you to go in. Like, you know, had you fill out the application and go through the process, and then once you were fully qualified, they told you what positions were available, and you could, I guess, target a particular position. So the first one was actually, I think it was Guatemala. And then the recruiter saw Morocco open up, but he'd spent some time in Morocco, and he thought that would be a better place to go. So he really recommended that. And it used to be the first one through the process got the assignment. It wasn't, I think later they made it more competitive and, you know, selected people as opposed to just taking the next person up. So anyway, Morocco fell through, and so I neither read about Morocco or Guatemala. I think it was actually El Salvador. And so anyway, when Morocco fell through, Fiji opened up, and he was really high on going to Fiji. He highly recommended that as an assignment. He said, you're through the process, you're the first one ready, no one else is even close to being available, so this is basically there if you want it. All you have to do is say yes, and you're in. And then he made a comment about El Salvador. He goes, hey, if you don't take this and Morocco's gone, you'll be stuck in El Salvador, or something like that. And I thought, oh, I thought you were recommending El Salvador, but El Salvador would have been cool. I was hoping for a further away experience, just miles wise, but so I had to go read about Fiji. I'd never read anything about it, and did a little bit of research over a week, and then got back to him and took the assignment.
Okay, so you were accepted and you're ready to go to Fiji. Did you guys travel over as a group, or?
The convenient thing was they staged in San Francisco, and at the end, when I finished my master's thesis that summer in Cal Poly, I drove up to Oakland, stayed with friends in the East Bay, and spent a couple of weeks there. I remember doing a nice trip up the Russian River with an old friend and his family. And then for staging, I just went across the bay, and my buddy dropped me off at the, I think it was the Bellevue Hotel in San Francisco. I think that was it. And yeah, we staged as a group. There was about 20 of us. And we met, I think for, you know, we checked in that day. I met one of my best friends. We were roommates, Jim Oliver, when we each got to our room respectively. And then had our first meeting the next day of the group, and went from there.
You flew directly from there?
Yeah, we staged for a couple of three nights. Had about several meetings. You know, these meetings where you talk about your views and your thoughts and even some role playing and stuff like that. And I think they even tried to deselect a couple of people at that stage. You know, it was pretty, in that respect, a little, well, not intense, but, you know, it was not relaxing. But we'd go out at night and have some beers and have some fun, so that was cool. And then, flew out like 3 days later, straight to Fiji, except we had to change planes in Hawaii, and there was a bomb threat on our plane. No, I take it back. There was a bomb threat on our plane leaving San Francisco, 1978. Before they did any screening at the gates and stuff like that. So they had to search the plane, and that took like 3 hours to go through everybody's bag, because you had to go get your bag, take it off the plane, or out of the place where they brought it off the plane, take it to an agent, they went through it, and then put it back on the plane. So we missed our connection in Hawaii, which was kind of fun, because then we got two nights in Hawaii at a hotel with no Peace Corps supervision. So we were just there at a motel somewhere, and we're just having fun, having beers and hanging out at the pool, and a couple of us rented a car and we drove around the island, and it was kind of a nice break, because you know the staff put us on the plane in San Francisco and was waiting for us in Nandi, but there was no staff in Hawaii, so we were just on our own, which is kind of cool. So yeah, 2 days later we were put on a plane to Fiji, and then flew in, you know, 3 days after that, or I mean, you know, 3 days after originally leaving. So that was kind of fun.
So do you remember your first impressions of Fiji when you arrived at the airport or you're flying in, and what you did the first couple of days?
I remember seeing Fiji from the air. Nandi, on the Nandi side, it was beautiful. Obviously tropical and beaches, and it was a gorgeous morning. I think we flew all night and landed early morning. And so, you know, it's great. And then we were picked up at the airport, met the director, a guy named John D'Alessio, whose picture is here in this Armada book. And we were bused to the Nandi Hotel, which I looked for when I was in Nandi a couple of months ago, which it's the one that was the Nandi Hotel is not there. So anyway. And spent a couple of nights there. That was a lot of fun. It was a little more relaxed. Peace Corps staff I liked a lot. D'Alessio was a very cool guy. Not too different from the guy you and I just met in Fiji at the reunion. I forget his name.
Dennis.
Dennis, yeah. Kind of similar personalities and skills in terms of being, you know, well-spoken, but cool and calm, and, but, you know, very intelligent. So D'Alessio was like that, too. So that was very positive. Then we took a bus. Well, I think we took... Did we take the local bus to Suva? I think we made every stop on the way to Suva, so it must have been the local bus. Unless it was a Peace Corps bus, but it's still a local bus. And with the, you know, no windows, the flaps are all rolled up, and driving through the country on dirt roads, a lot more dirt roads back in those days. And so the long bus ride, but that was kind of neat, doing the Coral Coast all the way over to Suva. So that was, you know, that was the arrival.
So you did your training then in country when you got to Suva?
Yeah, we were at...
Yeah, so tell us about your training, where you stayed, what the training consisted of, and...
We stayed at the Credit Union, a place called the Credit Union, which it's on Pender Street, which is a couple of doors down from the Peninsula Hotel where I stayed when we did the reunion. In fact, the first thing I did was walk over there after I got to the hotel. I walked over to see if it was still there. And the structure's still there. It looked like it was maybe converted to some sort of flats, but it was a kind of a dormitory setting when I was there. And they had, I don't know, probably 30 beds in there. Not sure where the women stayed, because they were in a different dorm. Maybe they were downstairs, because I think we're all on site. And so we started doing Fijian classes right away, and the people slated for Hindi volunteer sites were doing Hindi lessons. But one thing that we got to do that we were told was unusual was they didn't try to feed us because the credit union wasn't set up for it. So they gave us a per diem per day. And so unlike most volunteer groups where they take you to a mess hall to eat or something like that, we were hitting restaurants and, you know, bars the whole couple of weeks, you know, because we had a per diem and we were out all over town. It was a lot of fun. Back then, you know, $3 would get you more than get you a dinner and a beer. The Peninsula Hotel was next door. We go over there for breakfast. And movies back then were probably 75 or 50 cents. So a lot of fun. A really good group. Language training was good. And liked the people in the group a lot. And then we did that until we went and did a village stay. And then, so for that, let's see, we broke up into groups of about five or six. So we had like, I think, four groups. And my group flew out to Ngao, the island of Ngao, which was really cool. And there's a village there called Nukualoa. And we were there a week. And so the people there were super nice to us. I stayed in the house that belonged to a woman named Lysa Mothe. And she had a few kids. Her husband was deceased. I think he might have at one time been a chief or the chief of the village. He was a very important guy in the village, but he had passed away. So anyway, we did, I guess we did more language lessons there. Joni Thangi was our, did Joni go with us? I might have, no, I think it was Sova Tambua went with us. And just had this great week of staying in the villages, eating village food, eating way too much, oh my God. Drinking kava every night. And then, you know, just they had a big party for us at the end of the week. So in one of the big breweries, music and dancing and drinking kava and a lot of food. So it was a great week. When we flew out of Ngao, the chief of that village, all week long he'd been speaking Fijian only. And at the last day we're about to leave and I heard he was on the Fiji rugby team, national team. So I in English, because I couldn't do it in Fijian, I just said, well, what was it like being on the national team? And the guy started speaking perfect English. So he'd been speaking Fijian all week. And when I asked him about rugby, he just went right into his rugby story. So that kind of cracked me up. When we were flying out of Ngao, the airport was at the bottom of the island, the south end of the island. They were up in about the west side. And when we flew over the village, pretty high, they were using mirrors to reflect at our plane, so we saw these sparkling or bright, flashing mirrors as we flew away. That was kind of a neat end of the experience. I got one other anecdote there. When we were doing the big party, the Fijians get up and sing and dance, and they know all the songs, they know all these great dances, and so we were thinking, what can we do? We don't know any songs that we can really sing, and dancing is dancing. And then Bev Oliver, then Bev Angel, got the idea to do the hokey pokey. And so we got up and, did the hokey pokey, and you put your right foot in, take your right foot out, left foot in, left foot out, right arm, left arm. And then at the end, of course, you put your tush in there and you take your tush out. And when we did that, the Fijians just fell apart laughing. The place was screaming with laughter when they saw us do that. Because they couldn't believe that move. It was at the right time of night. It was at the end of the night. And everybody had been drinking kava. So when we were just leaving the village out at the bus stop, the Fijians wanted to do the hokey pokey. And we were doing that at the side of the road waiting for the bus. So
all right.
That was hilarious.
Yeah, you taught me something.
Yes.
So you just did the one village stay during your training?
I did a Indian farm stay. So they had us do both cultures, even though I was going to work with Fijians. So that was really cool too. Same group, although I took Hindi lessons, but not as intensely as a Fijian. Stayed at an Indian farm near Lautoka, which I tried to find the first day I got back. But there was so much development on that site since the last time I was in Lautoka. I couldn't get over all the traffic. A man named Ram Lakhan, I think it was his name, and his family. Oh, I forget the daughter's name. She was pretty cool. And he had a son who I think was off working. And so that was pretty neat. They had a cane farm with a dramatic view of the, just off the coast there of Lautoka. And they had an outdoor shower. When you took a shower, you had a view all the way down the coast. It was like one of the best showers I've ever used. And the outhouse was about the same. You also had a pretty good view from the outhouse. Very nice food. I liked curry a lot. And they were really nice people. I remember meeting one other guy who I was friends with later in Suva, Indian guy, but don't remember his name. They had a nice picnic for us one day, took us down to the beach and met some of the guys. And I think we had one session where they brought out the gin and sat around drinking gin. I think it was Gordon's. Indians seem to like gin. And they also like kava. But so that was a really nice day. We're all at different farms, though, so we're split up. So one of the women got kind of harassed sexually, though, so I heard about that sometime later. At the time, she didn't complain. She didn't complain. She sort of implied this guy was giving her Groucho Marx routine, but she didn't. So later I was kind of disappointed. I didn't have a better idea what was going on, because I remember she talked about it. And I don't know how bad it was, because she was just someone who didn't act like anything bothered her. So I might still have to ask her about that someday.
Yeah.
Still a good friend.
So you're still friends with a lot of the people that you trained with and were in your group?
A few. Jim and Bev Oliver, Stu Patterson. We're in the group. There's a couple others, but no, there's like three I'm really close to. There's some others on Facebook I sort of am friends with through Facebook, but haven't seen them in years. And then some volunteers who were there, Bob Tuxen on Facebook posts a lot. So yeah, just the three, but they were, three of the people who we were great friends right away in Fiji. So I'm not surprised those friendships survived.
Lasted.
Yeah.
Okay, so then you finished your training and you get assigned to the Native Land Trust Board. And that was where?
NLTB is right in Suva, not far from, I think it's Thakombau Park, there across from the GPH. Is that the right name? I think of that. I didn't remember it until we were there recently. And I think it's Thakombau. That big, or is it Prince Albert? I don't know. But anyway, it was just not far from the parliamentary buildings and the state lands building and the planning department. They had a planning department. What were they called? Town and Country Planning, I think they were called. And although I was a planner at the Native Land Trust Board, they had a couple of people over at Town and Country. So me and another guy were assigned to NLTB, and they wanted us to do basic planning for native land, because 83% of the land in Fiji is still Fijian owned by law, and it could be leased out, but could not be sold. And so a lot of it was leased out for cane farming. You know, the British had sort of helped to revamp the NLTB, and we're trying to make it more efficient. So they had a bunch of expatriates that were running basically NLTB for a while under the Fijian general manager. I think at the time it was Kami Kamitha. And so anyway, they wanted to, you know, push more urban development because the, you know, cities were growing anyway. So they wanted to have orderly planning. It was, you know, it was a positive approach to development. So they wanted to, rather than just be haphazard, you know, have development plans for each urban area and also for tourist development. So my colleague Greg Barber and I worked on those plans. He did the tourism part and I did the urban planning.
And Greg was a volunteer or an expat?
He was a volunteer. Yeah, he was in my group. So so anyway, your question was, where was it? It was right there in the downtown of Suva. I had a desk job. I had a secretary who I shared with a few people. But it was very Fiji speed, so it's, it ended up, oh, I remember doing, you know, reports on stencil, so I could run copies when I had to teach a class at one point. I'm planning to the state management group, so I had to write a syllabus for that. So anyway, it was pretty nice. I could walk to work, shared a house with a couple of volunteers, and eventually moved out to Nasese, which is still walking distance, and shared a house there with Bev and Stu, two of my best friends, and then Jim Oliver, who Bev ended up marrying, was there from time to time, and eventually at the end of his assignment, lived in the house with us. So it's pretty sweet. I mean, you know, nice job, good agency, got to travel to do plans for places like Latoka, Sigatoka, Nandi, even Lombasa, Ma, and I think I did Nasori. Did not do Suva. Suva was something they were working on when I was just visiting there in June. So, and they're doing that themselves. But so anyway, that's where I worked, NLTB. Big office building. They shared it with the State Lands Commission. I think it was State Lands, maybe not Commission. They had the top floor and the bottom floor, and State Lands had, I think, the second floor. So, still there. I just went in there in June, in the reunion, and a little bit of a facelift, but basically the same place. So, it's kind of neat to go back and see what was going on.
Yeah. So, did the experience of working environment in Fiji and the living environment, was it what you had envisioned before you left, or was it different in a lot of ways?
Oh, planning is pretty much, you know, you get your assignment and planners go work their reports and maps and everything else and bring it back. So the day-to-day work was exactly what I trained for and was used to doing. The management was pretty good. I mean, there was a guy named John Salmon, who is my supervisor, and he was a good guy, British. They were on a contract, and very professional, very good. So bringing the plans to him for review and comment, you know, it was a very professional relationship.
Yeah.
So it was very good.
How about your interaction with the locals, and either work or around the neighborhood?
The Fijians at work were great, very friendly, very supportive. So I'm a little bit socially, but not a lot. It's kind of hard to break through at times socially, other than, you know, maybe just occasional beer or something. But Tavita Kambakura was a guy who was really cool, very nice. He was a mid-level manager, or maybe a bit higher than that, but very dynamic guy, very supportive of me and Greg, and also spoke and read English better than most people. So I think he had an easier way of, you know, relating to us than some Fijians. Socially, my big breakthrough in Fiji was maybe 8 or 10 months after I got there. I started playing basketball, and basketball gets to be very social. You get to meet everybody who plays basketball in the league, and then if you're an American, they want you to be a coach on a team, of a team. So once I started playing basketball, I started hanging out with the sort of the basketball Peace Corps crowd, because we played every Sunday morning, and then also ended up coaching a couple of women's teams. So socially, that was a big kind of breakthrough, because the Fijians love sports, and so playing sports was just a natural for them. They just got a big kick out of it. So I got treated great by the people in Fiji.
So that was a good way to make friends in the local community. And
yeah. I mean, otherwise I'd occasionally get invited out to somebody's house for dinner, but mostly I was just pretty polite, but not so easy to break through on that level. So sports was a natural. I'm glad I did that.
So did you get any chance to take some time off from work while you were there and do a little traveling around the island?
Yeah, I was fortunate in my job to, I always had, would do a site visit for each place I was studying. So I could either fly or drive around the island. NLTB had vehicles, so when I wanted to go somewhere, I could get a Land Rover. So that was pretty cool. I got used to driving on the left side of the road. The Fijians usually would send a land agent with me, or have somebody meet me to sort of make sure I could get around to all the sites and check out everything out. So that was really good. And then they'd usually, take care of me at night, take me out to dinner, take me to grog. And so I got to know people. There's a big NLTB office in Lautoka, another one in Lombasa. And so I got to know people in Lautoka, up in Vanuatu. And so that was good. But we did, some basic social trips. I remember Joni Thami, our Fijian teacher, took us on a village stay up to his village in, somewhere up in Tailevu, just a gorgeous spot overlooking the coast there. And I remember we brought some beer up the first night. So it's unusual to have beer in the village, but we first night was drinking beer, and everybody got a kick out of that. And it was kava and spearfishing the rest of the week. Spearfishing is amazing. I did one other village stay. A guy named Aroni Galilawo and my dad visited. Took us on a village stay closer to Nasori, which is really cool. Even though you could drive into the village, he took us on some punts back up some of the riverways. And I think we just stayed one night. My dad, at the time was about 70, so I wasn't going to put him through a lot of that, but he had a great time. So, and a few other village stays here and there, and a trip up to Nandiravatu. When I got my first decent break, me and Jim Oliver took off for New Zealand for a month.
Oh, he did.
And hitchhiked around there. But you asked about travel around Fiji, but we took off for New Zealand. That was pretty cool.
All right. So, you stayed there for 2 years, right?
Yeah. No, I stuck around almost a whole extra year, because I was on my way back. I was going to go to law school when I got back, and I would have closed service around September of 80, and I think I would have just missed the start of law school unless I closed service early. I'd have to do a ET, early termination. Hmm. Or somehow apply for a release. And I was not in a hurry to leave, so I thought, well, I'll start law school in 81. And then I thought, okay, from September to the next so
September, you know, if I go home right away, I'll just be sitting around for 10, 12 months waiting for law school to start. I didn't want to do that. I thought I'd rather be in Fiji. So I extended for a year, and it turned out that was a mistake. I should have extended incrementally, because once you extend for a year and then you want to leave early, they were going to call that an early termination and make me go straight home, because your ET, you couldn't just get the airfare. So I had to negotiate that. I probably should have done a six-month extension and then a three-month extension or stuff like that. But it worked out. But so I stayed almost 3 years. And because I knew I was leaving early, I didn't take that free trip home they give you when you extend that extra year. They pay your way home. And
oh, right.
Because I knew if I left early after that, that would probably cause some angst. So so I'd been there in almost 3 years by the time I went home. And, out of a group, the people who had extended, and there was a few of us extended, I'd been the longest in country without, going home. And so I remember when I went through, I was in Ireland on my way home. I took the long way home, and some Irish guy picked me up, and he thought I should have traveled more and gone more places. And then he finally said, "Well, how long have you been gone?" And I said, 3 years. And that finally impressed him. I was like, "What? You were gone for 3 years?" And he said, "Yeah." So, but I was basically in 3 years in Fiji. That's one stop in New Zealand.
So do you think there were any major accomplishments, or what do you think your main accomplishments were there, and your biggest, maybe the most memorable things that you worked on or did when you were in Fiji?
The town plans were considered useful. I mean, they were short-term plans, but I did do a basic plan of, Nandi, back then a much smaller town, and identify native land close to the urban area or right in the urban area, and just say, well, here's development opportunities for residential or urban or, commercial development. And the British expatriates who were working there at the time, they were like, yeah, give us the plans. We'll go, even if it's in a lease, we'll work on getting it out of the lease and developing in the property. So, give it to us. We're ready to do it. So in that respect, it's very short-term planning, but still was, I felt productive. And then they had me teach a class. They had a training program for the Fijians to become land managers. The whole idea was the British were training their replacements, just like Peace Corps was training our replacements. So I wrote a class on planning. It was like seven or eight classes, and I wrote basically a lesson for each class, So it took a while to write all that, but once I had it together, it was pretty easy to give the class. The class was kind of fun. And so both were pretty positive. I felt like I was respected and valued, and so that was good. No major, home runs of saving the world or anything like that, but no major disappointments either. So, I felt like I was working in a good office and had, good people to work with and for. So it was good.
So now it's been over 37 years since you since you left Peace Corps, but you've been back a time or two since, and you kept a connection with Fiji somehow.
Right?
So how would you say that couple of years in Fiji drove the direction of the last 30 plus years?
I kind of lost connection with the country because last time I went back was the early 90s. So I've been, that's over, well, it's at 30, you know, over well, about 30 years,
yeah.
And maybe 35. So Winston Thompson, the former ambassador,
right?
He made a really nice comment at that dinner we were at, where our last night in Suva, and he said that Peace Corps made Fiji a better country for all the different places we helped and things we did. So, I really appreciated those comments because you do the work we did, and then looking at the country now and how the sugarcane plantations have gone downhill in a dramatic way, and planning is planning. What those towns look like now compared to what I planned. Planning is good for like 5 years on that level, but So 37 years later, you can't really tell much, but it was, I really appreciated Winston's comments. He was very generous in saying, you know, it helped the country a lot. And so I guess I just would leave it at that.
So this dinner that you mentioned, that was part of the 50th anniversary of Peace Corps Fiji and the celebrations where the group went back.
Yeah, we went back in June of this year, 2018, and we're there for a couple of weeks or so, and a lot of good events that you helped plan. So the organic farm with the chickens was pretty impressive. The low-income housing project, a couple of projects I missed that you did before I got there, including I think building a playground for one of those schools. Did a museum night with a retrospective of Peace Corps photography in Fiji over the years. And then the 4th of July party, about a week before the 4th of July at the U.S. Embassy, was pretty cool, very well done. And then Winston Thompson, he was at the museum, and I remember him when I was in Fiji because he ran the financial planning agency, I forget what they call it, but it was the economic planning arm of the government.
Mm-hmm.
I think it might have been economic planning. And he was a minister, and then he went on to become the ambassador to the United States for 6 years, just earlier this decade. So it was kind of neat to meet him because he was such a nice guy. I didn't ever get to talk to him while I was there. He was kind of larger than life, but he was a super nice guy. And the 50th was a great thing. And Jay Stuck did a great job. He should get an award, and he should get his, you know, his, like, bust of his head on, you know, Rushmore or something like that.
Yeah, right. Okay. All right, thanks, Bill. Well, I guess we've wrapped up all the questions. Any other reflections or anything else you want to add here before we conclude the interview?
I don't think so. It's been so long now. When I went back, I didn't do any real research on connecting with people. So when I walked into my old office, it had been so long since I had been in that office, since about 1992. There was obviously nobody still around. And they politely agreed to see me the next day. But when the guy agreed to see me, we talked to him on the phone. He didn't know what I wanted or who I was. And so the next morning, me and a guy named Joe Sylvester walked in. And Joe had worked for the Fiji Sugar Corporation over in Lautoka, although I didn't know him back in Fiji. And so, but we piled around a bit. And so I said, come with me to this meeting. So we walked in and I explained to the planner, Apelli, that I used to work at NLTV, and his jaw kind of dropped and says, really? And I said, yeah. And he goes, oh, let me go see if the manager's in. So he went and got the manager and of planning, Richelli, I forget Richelli's last name, who ran the planning department. And they had herself and Apelli were the planners, and they had a staff of about four people, including draftsmen. And so I was sat down with Richelli and Apelli for a couple of hours, just talking Fiji issues and planning. And they thought it was so nice that I bothered to stop in and say hi. So that was pretty cool. So yeah, that was a nice little, point to the trip. Walked around the old neighborhoods. I walked by my old house, walked by the old China Club, which is no longer functioning as a club. Went over to UCSB, went by the old National Gym. Went into the track there at the National Stadium. The fence was down. I just walked in and started walking around. And when I walked out, I realized they had security at the gate. And when they saw me walk in, they just kind of shrugged their shoulders and let me walk around and look around. And when I walked out, I said, oh, was I supposed to be in there? And they're like, no, it's fine, don't worry about it. And then sort of Fijian, they sized me up right away and said, oh, he's okay. So so it's fun to go back. Changed a lot. A lot busier than I remembered. I think I always thought it was pretty polluted. I remember visiting Fiji, Suva, a couple of times, and whenever I got back home, I thought, yeah, Suva's, you know, kind of a big, dirty city. They'd done a good job of cleaning up the buses. I remember them belching dirt all the way up and down every road. And right away when I got there, I saw a belching bus, and I thought, oh, they haven't changed that at all. But they have. When I got to Suva, it was much cleaner. So
fewer belching buses.
Yeah, especially in Suva. I think they, you know, cracked down on it. I think maybe there's some still old vehicles running around, but by and large, you know, they did a good job there. So it was fun. And I guess that's all I got.
All right. Well, thanks, Bill.
Sure.
And this concludes our interview.